Hello, and welcome to episode 41 of the Book Wars Pod. I am Kate, and I'm here with Chris and Kristen as usual, and we will be wrapping up Phasma today by Delilah S. Dawson. Yay!
Woo!
All right. We are recording this one right after episode 40, so, you know, I'm like halfway through this beer, so we're gonna see how that goes for everybody. And speaking of my beer, what are we drinking at this moment, Kristen?
I'm still drinking, if you want some more beer yeast talk, check out last episode. I'm drinking
yeast talk.
I'm drinking Barelick Brewing in Portland, Oregon. I'm drinking their New Noise. It's an American IPA. It comes in at 6.4. It is delicious.
And I am still drinking Eagle Rare bourbon, the same glass I poured myself before. But it was intentionally a large glass to last us through two episodes. Because yep. I don't remember if we mentioned this in previous episodes or on Twitter, but Kristen has to go out of town for like
fucking
an extended period of time. And so we are just knocking out Phasma before Kristen goes so that you all don't get your quality stream of content interrupted.
Quality yeast talk.
Quality yeast content. Yeast the yeast content you look for in your podcasts.
Please don't ever say yeast content again.
I'm pretty sure we say yeast one more time.
Again.
Yeah.
Yeast. I'm going to Denmark again for work. So I don't know why they didn't just leave me over there at this point. But okay, sera, sera. Probably because the hotels were very expensive. Also,
is yeast like beetle? Sorry, go ahead.
Were you just trying to say something about yeast? What's wrong with you?
I was going to say, is yeast like Beetlejuice, where if we say yeast content three times fast, things just start bubbling?
I hope so. Ew. Stop saying bubbling.
Why are you
the worst?
Like
this? Why is this recorded?
Oh my god! It made you sleep on the balcony at night.
Quinn's going to Kool-Aid Man through this door, I assume, at some point. Okay, I think it stopped snowing. I can't tell. Oh my god, I don't know. He's getting us food to cook for the foods. I think we're having curry.
Weather's fake. You're always having curry.
I know, that's because it's
good. I love it. I love it. I'm so jealous.
We have
tried as much curry as you did.
We do it in the Instant Pot, and we do, like, we're not always having the same type of, like, we have all different, like, pastes and stuff. So, we do, like, different colors and whatnot.
Wait,
you know, like,
Kristen,
I know, it's just hysterical.
Do you have good Instant Pot curry recipes you want to send me?
Sure. You guys have the Instant Pot? I didn't know that.
We do. We got it for Christmas.
Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah, it's great. I mean, I don't. You know, I don't have the recipes. Quinn has them.
Fair.
Absolutely.
Respect.
But yeah. We also got an Instant Pot recipe book for Christmas. I think you might just use that one. So.
Ooh, I'll is it like
a picture of it.
Is it like the ubiquitous Instant Pot recipe book?
I think so.
Okay, cool. That's on our list.
Just got a snap of the cover.
There he is. Quinn, is it snowing out?
What?
Is it snowing out? I thought so. We just started the second episode and I looked out the window and I go, holy shit, it's snowing out.
it's pretty gross, but
I wonder if I'm gonna have work tomorrow. TBD.
Guys, I'm talking about my beer.
oh yeah, talk about your beer, sorry.
God damn it. So like I said, I still have half a beer left from last episode recorded, so I am still drinking Anderson Valley's The Kimmy, the Yink, and the Holy Gosa. So,
I need to Google that and see if it's something.
I know,
because sometimes it's just like inside jokes for the brewery, but for like Anderson Valley, they like distribute, so that would be weird.
Maybe they don't care.
True. I know. Probably.
All right.
Oh yeah, cooking noises are gonna be happening. Just
hang on, I'm looking this up.
Oh my god, it's happening.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, Christopher.
All right. If you're looking for a beer with a local story behind it, boy, does Anderson Valley Brewing Co. have you covered.
Oh my god.
The Anderson Valley has its own unique variation of the English language called Bootling. I actually knew this.
What?
Which is which is made up of the terms invented by the women and children workers in fields around the turn of the century. So in Bootling, the Kimmy means a man or father, the Yink means a boy or son, and the Holy Gosa is a play on the Holy Ghost.
Oh, it's amazing.
I didn't remember it, but somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew that Bootling was a thing.
So they just have their own fucking pigeon language down there.
Yes.
Do people still...
No.
Okay. I don't know what they... Okay, listen.
No. That was a fair question. They do not still speak.
I mean, I don't know what fuck all they do down there, because the way you talk about anything but coastal California is this giant wasteland of hicks, so...
That's what it is.
Nice.
At Space Jess, back me up here.
I've been to that place also, although, like, it can't be as bad as Reno. I got stuck in Reno once because they canceled my flight back to Portland because of something.
But did you shoot a man just to watch him die?
Oh my god, yeah, I did, basically. I had a wellness check-in happen at the hotel because they were like, you haven't left in like over 24 hours. And I was like, I'm walking to In-N-Out, okay?
Oh my god!
I'm fine.
That's so fucking judgmental.
I know. But they have to do that to make sure nobody got murdered because it's Reno.
Oh,
I'm so pissed off.
It's amazing.
Because I had no car. Like, everybody, I was there with my whole family and we were all staying at like an airport Marriott and they all got to leave. And like, I was like, is there any other flight you can get me on? They were like, absolutely not. You have to stay in Reno tonight. And I was like, so I stayed in Reno, but I did get to go to In-N-Out, so that's always a great thing.
Holy fuck.
Oh god, I want In-N-Out so bad.
I know.
Oh, we're going to California in May. I can get In-N-Out. Sweet.
Yay, nice. Yay. Well, let's talk about that later. Am I going to be there? Who knows?
Would you? In Oakland?
Know. It's easy for me to get there.
Oh, I mean, you could be, yeah. we're going for a wedding though, so it's we're only going for a weekend for a wedding, so it's gonna be a little bit of a whirlwind.
I take it back.
I'm gonna be there. Kate will not be there. I'm gonna be there in June for a whole week. So if you want to hang out, you're welcome.
Maybe
somehow sitting for my parents.
Fun. Are there dogs?
There is a single solitary dog, yes.
He's a good boy though.
He's a good boy. His name is Chewbacca.
Woof woof. Did they let you name the dog, Chris?
Sure did.
How did I know? Okay.
Yeah,
sorry,
so
we're
weird.
So off track.
I know, but we even started talking.
We have talked
yet?
About nothing.
Well,
let's talk about Phasma and what the book means and also she means to the universe.
Chris? Damn it.
Well, since everybody wants me to talk about it, as Kit, oh my god. It's creeped. Don't stop doing that. Stop it. Kate's eyes twitching. There's weird staring happening. Anyway, so I wanted to talk about like our, you know, we get back to this occasionally, but our like stated purpose of like what do the canon books add to the overall Star Wars universe? And like, I feel like there's not a ton to take away just because this was such, if you listen to episode 40, we talked kind of about the point of this book was just to talk about Phasma rather than the whole universe as a whole. I do think that there are things that we can take away from this. I mean, first, like, from just a very basic point, like, Vi and Cardinal and Siv and Torby are all characters who are now, to use Phasma's term, loose ends. Like, do they survive? Like, what do we think happens to them? Do Siv and Torby join the Resistance?
So my answer to that question are, I haven't thought about it because it doesn't matter. Number one.
Yes, agreed.
Yep.
And number two, I mean, these books have introduced so many new characters to the Star Wars universe, you know, Rey Sloane probably being first among them, that it's very conceivable they could pop up somewhere else. And I honestly don't really want to think of a future for them. I am hoping to see them pop up elsewhere because they're definitely super interesting characters. I want to know more about Vi's story because, of course, we get a lot of mentions about her brother because Cardinal's hanging that over her head. And I definitely want to know more about him and how they got involved in all this political fuck shit. And honestly, I love a short story about Cardinal and his climbing through the ranks of the First Order.
Yeah, I want to know more about him.
All I was going to say is I remember a few weeks ago, I think, Leland Chi, who is a member of the Lucasfilm Story Group, tweeted in response to somebody who asked that Vi, at least, we would be seeing again.
Hell yeah!
Fuck yeah. That's amazing.
That's awesome. Oh, great. Awesome. Perfect.
Thanks, Leland.
Yeah.
Leland doesn't listen.
He totally doesn't listen.
No.
He could. Can we ask him to?
No.
I don't know who this person is.
He's like, one of the heads of the story group.
He's Pablo. Oh,
yeah, we don't want him to listen.
He's Pablo, but nicer.
He's nice, you, nice, but stronger. All right, this got weird. Another question that I had was...
Tomorrow for us.
Anyway, one question...
Fuck.
We didn't just talk about anything else. What are you talking about? One question that I had, in addition, is about Phasma and Finn. Because, you know, we get this view in Force Awakens that Finn is somehow important. And I think... I want to say in the Force Awakens visual dictionary, it says that Finn was like one of Phasma's best recruits, or best proteges, trainees, whatever word you want to use, one of her best stormtroopers.
He's apparently, like, I think most of, more of his story is also told in Before the Awakening, which is a middle grade book.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So, because it follows Rey, Finn, and Poe's lives before TFA. So, anyway.
Interesting.
Just for anybody who wants to do extracurricular reading. We don't do middle grade on the pod, usually, so anyway.
Yeah. No, totally. I'm going to have to look into that.
As you were saying.
But why does she hate him so much? Because we see in TLJ in particular, she seems to have a lot of animosity towards Finn. And it's interesting because for someone who is so impersonal about the First Order, it's interesting to see that and see like how personally she takes his betrayal. And I don't know, I wanted to dive into that.
I mean, if you're remembering correctly about that fact about Finn, that he is one of her personal handpicked, you know, future leaders of the First Order's military, then I think just her, I mean, she's not completely without feeling, like, her taking him under her wing, I think she must see something of herself in him that, you know, because, I mean, Finn's scrappy as hell, first of all. And also, Phasma's always thinking about herself. Like, I think that's probably why she took a shine to him. And then for him to not share her values or lack thereof, risk coming, like, if he was going to, first of all, fuck up on Jakku, and get himself in trouble, which, you know, already highlights him as, you know, a future weak point, someone to get rid of, because we know from the book that they have no trouble just disappearing people. Surprise, surprise. And also that, not only, and then he defected, which is, like, from, you know, a strong military power, which Phasma has no respect for. And not only he did that, but he had no sense of self-preservation, came back to Starkiller Base, and tried to, like, fuck shit up. And so she's probably just looking at him like, why are you such a fool? Like, I just think she's just, like, the most irritated.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess the defection isn't weird, but the defection to what she perceives as a weaker power.
Right. I don't know if at that point, he doesn't necessarily consider himself resistance, and I don't know that she does either, but obviously there are fucking resistance X-Wings just, like, bombing Starkiller Base. She's gotta be able to put two and two together.
And I'm sure she knows who Han Solo is.
Yeah. And he's wearing the jacket. yes. Which I'm sure she has no idea about, but just looks like more of a resistance jacket.
Doesn't it?
Hashtag resistance jacket.
I mean, all I wrote in the outline for this point is, like, is it just because he's a bad reflection on her? Which I kind of think is definitely part of it. Like, she doesn't like looking bad under any circumstances. And, like, obviously we get, like, some of that saltiness between Kylo and Young Hux when they're talking about that, but I mean, I think she's just really not happy that somebody that she personally trained is not following orders, basically.
I think that's absolutely true, and she says herself in The Last Jedi, she calls him a bug in the machine. And, you know, it's just like, what is this defective motherfucker that I thought was cool? Like, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I had so many questions in this section. This section is just entirely me asking questions. But did the Phasma novel change how we view Phasma in the films?
I just want more Phasma now. Now I'm like, she has this really fucked up, interesting backstory. And now I just want to know more of her life in the First Order.
Literally same. And I want some more of those characteristics that we see in the book. Of her being honestly really smart, because she doesn't really come off as that smart necessarily in the movie unless mm-hmm. you read the book. I would love to see some of that strategic tactical thinking that she's so good at somewhere in the movies. Like, if she doesn't come back for 9, basically, I'm going to have a shit fit. which is fine.
It would just be such a waste. I mean, this kind of gets into my last question, is she still alive after The Last Jedi? It would just be such a waste of, like, amazing backstory setup for no reason if she's not back for 9. It'd be ironically very J.J. Abrams.
A mystery box. What's in it?
I'm not still bitter about Lost. It's fine.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I mean, I just wrote Spider-Mall on here because that's my favorite How Is He Still Alive story.
I mean, like, honestly,
if Spider-Mall can do it, then like, fuck.
we know from
hotly contested in the fandom. So,
oh yeah, totally. I mean, we know from, you know, extra materials and like visual dictionaries and stuff that Phasma's armor is fireproof. I'm just saying.
And we sure do.
We know from the book itself, honestly. Like,
yeah,
that thing got fucking. Yeah,
a ship.
Right. That was that not part of the orbital bombardment, or?
It was. It got buried.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The other thing I was gonna say was the other thing. What was I gonna say?
Spider-Mall.
Oh yeah. So Spider-Mall. They did it. Thanks.
You're so welcome.
I mean, like this is Star Wars, and literally anything can happen because the rules aren't real. Like, Stranger Things.
You mean it's fake and in space, Kate?
Why? Yes, I do mean that.
Sorry, just it's been a while since we've said that, so
no, that's so real. But no, like there are no rules here. There's stranger, weirder things have happened in Star Wars, and so Phasma being alive, yeah, I would absolutely accept that. That would be fine.
I also, the Last Jedi novelization comes out in a couple weeks. I would love to see if there's a little more backstory in there, like around the time of Finn and Phasma's fight.
Ooh, or like at least some mention of like Finn looked down in the pit and was just like, no one could possibly have survived that, right?
Yeah, right. Like something like that. Oh, that'd be it. Perfect.
Right.
Also, yeah, can I just say? Oh no, go, Kristen.
Oh, sorry. I was just gonna ask you about novelizations, Chris, because I have never read any of them and they are out of scope for the pod. But I know you have read all of them that have been out so far. Is that correct?
That is correct. I would say most of the time they are not worth reading. Allegedly, well, no. Sorry, that's not fair. They are worth, you know, they serve their purpose, which is to be books of the movie with a little bit of like internal monologuing.
Yeah, allegedly. That's kind of what I was going to ask. Is like, what do we usually get in them? But I will actually let you talk. Sorry.
No. You're good. Allegedly, Last Jedi is going to have new information in it. Rogue One had a bit of new information and like new scenes that were added, which made it much more worth reading. I'm gonna read the Last Jedi novelization and I'll let y'all know if it's like how it is and if we want to cover it on the pod if it has enough new information.
Cool. As a bonus, probably, because we have such an intense reading schedule, like we always do.
Yeah, right.
Did you read it for The Force Awakens, just out of curiosity?
I did. That was the all respect to Alan Dean Foster, who wrote, the original Star Wars novelization with George Lucas, or co-wrote. I'm not really sure what the division of labor was there. But The Force Awakens novelization is not super worth reading.
It's just watch
Force Awakens again.
Was. Yeah. Don't worry, I will. I always will. cool. Thank you for that little sidebar nation on the novelizations, because I don't know anything about them. So
novelization sidebar nation.
That's right.
Ew.
Kate, let's talk about writing.
Rhyming.
Shit.
Let's talk about rhyming.
Let's talk about literally anything, but whatever the fuck Chris wants to talk about.
So yeast pod.
Oh yeah, no more yeast pod.
Alright.
Speaking of queer.
Oh god. So anyways, I wanted to talk about the writing style of the book itself and how effective we thought it was. Because when this book came out, I think I mentioned briefly on another episode, another one of our Phasma episodes, that it was pretty controversial. We had, you know, your run-of-the-mill dumb trolls and fanboys who were just like, we're getting a book about Phasma, she's so fucking boring, and she's such a shitty character, because she's a woman. Woo. Yeah, the same fanboys fucking love Boba Fett for fucking, like, tripping and falling into a Sarlacc, so eat my ass.
Yeah, she has, like, one of the more... I mean, she obviously has, I would say, one of the more unique backstories so far of any character we've seen in any Star Wars. So I just think that those people are wrong, obviously.
Right. And just, like, on screen, Gwendolyn Christie is such an amazing actor that, like, she just has this super cool presence. She's just a super cool villain character. Like, even... she gets all of, like, I don't know, 10 minutes in between the two movies, but I don't even care. She's just... I just find her super cool. I will preface this whole discussion that we're going to be having by saying that this was not my favorite thing ever. For various reasons that we can get into, I guess. So first of all, things I wanted to talk about, the use of tense. So in, I guess, quote unquote, the present day, even though this takes place a little bit, you know, before The Force Awakens, as Vi and Cardinal are talking, those sections are written in present tense, whereas the sections where Vi is telling Phasma's story, which obviously happened, 9 to 15 years in the past, those are told in past tense. And there are many people in the universe who have many, many, many feelings about the use of present tense in fiction. And that was one of the things that people were, I guess, kind of complaining about. And Chris, did you say Aftermath is also written in present tense, or did I make that up?
I believe it is.
Right. And I know that Chuck Wendig also got dinged for that because people are assholes. Anyways.
Yeah, and that, much like Phasma, that had nothing to do, I'm sure, with the fact that he has a major, a gay major character. That sounds more accurate than a major gay character.
A major character who is a person of color and queer.
Yes.
Yes.
Major gay.
Major gay character.
Major gay? Oh, I can't wait to talk about Sinjir. Anyway, so I just wanted to talk about how y'all felt about the tense switching, if you had literally any opinions about it at all. And, you know, how effective did you think it was? What was its utility? Whatever. Go.
You'll never believe this. I did not focus on it as much as you did.
Woo! So,
but
so you're saying it didn't bother you?
It didn't bother me.
Oh wow!
No, it didn't bother me.
Imagine that.
No, it didn't. It didn't bother me. I think just because, like, I don't think it broke up the flow of the story. I think it was enough, like, within this, like, specific scenes and the specific what are they called, vignettes. I mean, it was more like vignettes into ship, like, Vi on the ship than it was even in the story, like, just because there was so much more story about Phasma. But, I mean, I think it was just, I think she made that, I think Dawson made that choice just because it made it easier to figure out when we were talking about. And it didn't really bother me. I thought, and her tone and stuff like that didn't really switch up very much between the present tense parts and the stuff that was happening through Vi's storytelling of Civ's storytelling. But tell me why it bothered you, Kate.
Oh, it didn't bother me. Wait, Chris wanted to talk first.
Oh, okay.
Oh no, I was just going to say it didn't really bother me. I thought that it was actually an effective tool for splitting us between the kind of storyteller mode of the Sire and their adventures on Parnassus versus you know, the more present tensive vie on the absolution. So I thought that it was an interestingly used tool to switch up the tone and the setting almost of the story and how we were intaking it, rather than just relying on chapter headers to do that.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I will say that, again, this actually was one of the things about this book that did not bother me. As a matter of fact, something you'll probably know if you've been listening for a while, I do my own writing. In all seriousness, though, I've played with tense in the similar way where things are supposed to be happening, you know, in quote-unquote present day or in the present tense, and flashbacks are in the past tense. And honestly, it's a tool that writers have that they've been given, and if it makes sense in context, then I say why not use it? It's just because it's kind of fun, honestly. And if it's not hurting the story or the point you're trying to make with the story, then, you know, why the fuck not? The other thing is that the present tense, of course, because it's in the present, it feels a lot more immediate. And we're going to talk about genre and atmosphere and such in a second. But it definitely, I think, adds to the fact that we feel very immediately that Vi is in a dangerous situation. She could literally be electrocuted to death at any moment. The stakes are really high. The room she's in is fucking disgusting, like, because it's a fucking torture chamber. Whereas, you know, Phasma's story, it's in past tense because it's in the past, but also there, I think, is enough going on in terms of events to keep the reader interested and feel immediately there, even if you do use past tense. Whereas, honestly, Vi and Cardinal, what do they do throughout this book? They have a conversation. It wouldn't feel that dangerous a situation, probably, if present tense had been used.
Agreed. And I think that, just to kind of get into our next point, which I think Kristen wanted to talk about, it kind of gets into the tone and the kind of grittiness that we experienced in that present usage of present tense.
Say gritty 10 more times.
I was going to say, if you want to hear Chris say gritty because he can't think of another word to use, I'll go to our first episode on Phasma, where me and Kate mock him ceaselessly for that. but yeah, I mean, I've had this kind of on the wrap-up outline since we started. I mean, obviously, this goes into absurdism, which we'll talk about kind of soon, but on this wrap-up. But I mean, it's obviously, like, super heavy-handed, and I think part of that is because it is storytelling, right? So we have Siv telling this story to Vi originally, right, which we don't see, and we just have Vi's retelling of it to Cardinal. And I think part of what, like, makes that grittiness so heavy-handed is just because it's a retelling of a story, and we're just kind of getting these, like, essential elements of Parnassos and what makes it Parnassos, and what makes each of these characters that we meet on Parnassos who they are. And I think, like, that kind of distillation, especially in an environment like Parnassos, is going to give us something that feels really heavy-handed, but ends up, I think, kind of doing its job. Maybe? No?
No, totally.
Did I lose anybody?
No, I just had nothing to add.
You had nothing to add. Oh,
I know. Kate's shocked.
I have things to add.
I was going to say, Kate, I know you wanted to talk about absurdism, but I think that probably ties in okay with what I said, hopefully.
Yes, it does, as a matter of fact. Thank you. Yes, this is, as Chris notes on our outline, our first foray into absurdism in Star Wars. And I know you wanted to know how we felt about it, whether we thought it was effective, whether we want to see more of it, Kristen. So, here's the thing for me. I principally did not enjoy this book because absurdism to me is, you know, it can be funny, it can be kind of slapstick, but it'll just bump right up against that line that divides itself and satire and not cross over it. And I really think that Dawson wanted to cross over into satire at least a little bit. And for me, she never did. So you have shit like, you know, the crazy-ass robots in Terpsichore Station, where you get that point where Phasma and her group try to overpower one of the robots, and they're like pulling out its guts and stuff, and it's malfunctioning, and it's saying all this like weird stuff, and that movie was pretty funny. And then she's trying to make this, you know, statement about humanity and sentience, but it never gets there. She doesn't actually really, she doesn't say anything about it at the end of the day. There's nothing is said there, in my opinion. And then, you know, there, I think I've said in previous episodes that this book also makes Stride Swords making a statement against capitalism and all the harm that can cause and all the damage it can cause. And I think that's underlying there, but it never, you know, it never reaches the point of full satire for me. And I'm thinking specifically of Uratu Station, where it's ridiculous that their factory can pump out loads of beautiful rainbow fabric and they can't have anything to eat, but it's not satire. It's just weird. It's just really fucking weird. It never gets...
It is super weird.
Yeah, it never gets to the point where you're just like, haha, this is like clever or something. It doesn't do that. It's just everything. It's like she wanted to say things with the weird shit, but the shit was so weird and she emphasized the weird so much that none of it said anything.
Yeah, I think the part where I thought it was most gonna turn into satire was when we like meet that dude thing that's covered in the Beatles right before they get Chirk. Into the, yeah, thank you, I don't remember names as we know, Chirk, when they're about to cross into like radioactive territory. I was like, there must be a purpose to this, and then there absolutely wasn't. So
no, he just fucking died.
Because he was that whole thing was one of the weirder things in the book, and that's saying something, I think.
Agree. Totally.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, I agree. I think that there were aspects of this book where it felt like it was going to turn into, like, full-on Gulliver's Travels, which would have been amazing, and, like, would have been something, we talk about how this is kind of our first foray into absurdism in Star Wars, and I think that on its face is great, and we should be playing with genre and, like, showing more range within Star Wars writing, and I loved that facet of this, but... I do agree. I think it could have been a little more. I think that we could have gone full on satire in Uratu Station. Exactly what you said, Kate, with Uratu Station and with Chirk and some of the more absurdist aspects here. And it could have been that much more interesting. And I feel like I can't help putting this book down and feeling like it might be a little bit of a missed opportunity for me personally.
Right. Yes. And what you're saying about, speaking of genre, you know, we have all this absurdist shit. We've got all this really dark shit. That's, you know, it's part of it is literally a, you know, a spy novel. It's a survival novel. It's one of those like weird travelogue sort of things. It's all these things, and it's almost like there are so many different aspects of the book that are all trying to be held in balance that none of them really take root for me. And when they don't do that, then it seems extraneous. It seems like it doesn't have a point for me. And I think we were saying last episode that Dawson felt that her point, like the project she wanted in writing this book, was to explain why Phasma is that person who was willing to shut off the shields at Starkiller Base without putting up a fight. And it's almost like that's the only thing Dawson had in mind, and she just was like, oh, but I have to spin this into an entire novel. This is not a short story, which I think this could have been. I think this could have been a short story, and I would have been stronger for it. She has to spin this thing out into an entire novel, and it's just like, it didn't work. Or at least for me, it didn't work. It just didn't work for me. There was, I know the answer to that question at the end, but there's no greater point. And there doesn't necessarily have to be, but when you hint at everything but the kitchen sink and you don't follow through in it, then I don't understand. I just don't understand.
Yeah, I liked it, though.
That's
as
fair.
As we know, I knew I was going to like it, though, because it's like a weird survivor story, and I like survivor stories like that. So I'm like, yeah, give me more weird desert shit. But I also... Yeah. Just because I liked it doesn't mean I understood why the fuck she did what she did. But yeah, I mean, it's not anything deep. I just enjoyed the read.
Yeah, I mean, and it doesn't need to be anything more than that. It's just that I have fucking taking too many goddamn creative writing classes to be able to read a book even for fun and not be able to point at something and be like, here's the point. And if it's not there, then I'm just like, why did you write this?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I enjoyed it as I was reading it, but I also do think I enjoyed it more for the story than for the writing, if that makes sense. Like, I think I enjoyed reading about Phasma, but I didn't so much... I agree with you, Kate. There were definitely points in this book where I was thinking, you know, again, I'm not a writer. I couldn't have done this even close to good or at all. But where I was like, I feel like there are some, not pulled punches, but missed opportunities maybe here.
Right. I mean, I literally don't need anything to be high literature, but I mean, the thing I was thinking about as you were talking, Chris, was like, you know, Dan Brown has all these books and they're all like really fucking stupid, honestly, but they're really entertaining to read and they deal with, at the heart of them, you know, the nature of belief and legend and all that stuff. And they carry through on that really, really well, in honestly kind of a way that hits you over the head with it, but at least they do that, you know? Mm-hmm. I just didn't really, I don't know.
Yeah. No, and I mean, and at the end of the day, it comes down to personal taste, too.
Right. Sure.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think just to, like, kind of wrap that point up, there have definitely been books that we've covered on this podcast where we have talked more about how, like, the storytelling has, like, enhanced the story. Just to, like, kind of point to Chris's point where, like, yes, I enjoyed the story and I like knowing more about Phasma, but I didn't think that the storytelling techniques totally like served it really well in that way that we've seen in some other books.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that really hits the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So last thing I wanted to talk about in terms of the writing was, we've talked a little bit about this before, but of course this is a story in a story, almost nested within another story. So how did we feel about it? Did we like it? Did we not like it? And why do you think Dawson chose to do this?
I mean, for me, and I touched on this a little bit more when we were talking about tense, but I think this really, like, the story in a story really gives it kind of, like, that Legends vibe to it. You're really just getting, like, this super distilled version of Phasma's life. I mean, obviously this book was not that short, but I still think you're getting this kind of like distilled version of Phasma's life where, you know, you're getting all of this stuff that Siv was probably like feeling, especially because, in the retelling, we get that Siv is kind of like a big feeler. Like she really like connects with people and beings and, mm-hmm. has a pretty good emotional IQ around that stuff. And I think that's without guessing too much or too little, but I think that's probably why I liked the story within a story so much, is just because it kind of did give it that, like, stuff of Legends kind of feeling that I don't think we necessarily could have gotten if it was, like, Phasma telling the story from first person, which would have been a horrible choice. But yeah, I mean, I think that just really enhanced the like legendy feeling of it all, which like this story really lends itself to.
Right, absolutely. And also, Phasma's not the kind of person who would be telling her own story anyway. She deliberately tries to bury it, so that fits as well. I also just want to say that like I enjoyed all the I actually really did like all the characters. I often liked a lot of the set pieces and stuff. It just didn't cohere for me, and so at the end of the day, I was just kind of put the book down and I was like emoji shrugged. So here we are, I guess.
Yeah. And to the story in the story, I enjoyed that it kind of lessened the stakes a little bit. Because if we're like, you know, if the story had been Vi discovering, like talking to Siv about all this, or like a novel of Phasma's youth, like...
Or a book about Siv, period.
Or right. A book, yeah. Well, like, I mean, I think a book about... Yeah, or a book about Siv. I think I think that would have, like, made it feel like the stakes are much higher, like, and then they almost died, dun 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 dun.
Right.
And, like, but, like, here, it, like, in a way that I did feel, like, worked, it, like, kind of lessened the stakes and that, like, this is stuff that already happened. Like, this stuff's all scary with the, like, fucking creepy lizards and beetles and everything, but it has no bearing on what's happening right now because it already happened, and
those
it
fucking
can't change
dogs.
Anything.
Oh, the gross creepy dogs.
Yeah.
Disgusting. Yeah, no, I think, Chris, I think you're exactly right about that, and I will say that that aspect of the writing did really work for me.
Did or did not?
Did.
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry, I couldn't tell.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Cool. There's one other aspect of this, which I suspect also hindered some of our enjoyment of the book, and particularly Kate's enjoyment. And that is the author herself. And I'll let Kate go into that.
Yes. So Dallas Dawson is very active on Twitter. She's, generally a popular person to follow, especially, like, you know, in the Star Wars fandom. She writes young adult books as well. And she's, you know, she's... And I think she would describe herself this way as well. She's a solid but a list author. You know, she's not super famous, but she's definitely known, which is great for her. That, you know, that's awesome. I certainly am not living that life right now. in being so active on social media, one inevitably sticks their foot in their mouth about various things, and Delilah has done that several times over. But I just wanted to highlight two of the things that are, I guess, more immediately relevant here. So, literally speaking of queer, Delilah has said in the past that, in terms of Phasma's sexuality, she headcanons Phasma as being asexual. And for those who don't know how to use Wikipedia, I guess, a person, asexuality is a sexual identity, like heterosexuality or homosexuality. It's just that you don't feel sexual attraction to other people. And within that, under that umbrella, there is also aromanticism. So you might be a person who doesn't feel sexual attraction to somebody, but you can feel romantic attraction to somebody. So I guess I'll describe that as more as on an emotional level. Some people who are asexual or ace, they don't feel that way. Sorry, I think I messed that up. If you're aromantic, you do not feel romantic feelings. If you otherwise, you do. But asexuality can contain both. Does that make sense?
Hey, everybody, do a Google.
Yeah.
Do a read.
Yeah.
And if you want this in better, prettier words, like, seriously, Google it, because I'm not that eloquent about it. Because I am not asexual myself. I don't want to speak for the asexual community, especially because they're absolutely one of those identities under the queer umbrella that does not get enough, is not given enough space to express themselves. There are a lot of horrible stereotypes about them, even within the queer community. Like, people are, like, to tell them that they don't exist, much like, I'm bi, I get that a lot. Like, it fucking sucks. So I don't want to necessarily put words in this community's mouth, but I do have friends who are ace and who have expressed to me how hurt they felt when Delilah said that she headcanons Phasma as being ace. Because one of the most pervasive and damaging stereotypes about asexual people is that they can't form any kind of relationship connections. Like, they can't have friends, they, like, don't actually feel love for their family, that they're basically psychopaths, just like Phasma is. And that's really, really harmful. Especially because, like I said, people who are asexual, they often don't get a voice in either the queer or the quote-unquote mainstream community. And Delilah writing this story, not being ace herself, and then saying that she headcanons Phasma as ace and she portrays this woman as a goddamn psychopath is kind of horrible. Like, that's so problematic. And it's, like I said, people find that deeply, deeply hurtful. And there have been various times on Twitter when fans have tried to politely, or not so politely, not that they should necessarily, but to point out that this is problematic, Delilah's pretty much shut them down, which is... You know, if you, to be a good ally, I think we all know means, you know, even if we don't agree with people, to sit down and listen, and then to think about what we're being told. You know, if somebody, you know, shouts you out, then you have a responsibility. If you're going to call yourself an ally, which Delilah does on social media, she publicly says things like that, but she's never really given much evidence that she's listening, and that's really frustrating for people. The other aspect of this that kind of goes hand in hand with it is that she recently wrote for IDW Comics. They put out Chris, do you remember if it was like a miniseries or a series?
It's Star Wars Adventures, which is a series, but not like, it's not ongoing like the Marvel series. It just like covers individual stories.
So there's like little short stories kind of in there. Okay.
Like issues.
Right. Okay. So she did one. Delilah wrote one of those issues on the Chico sisters, Paige and Rose from The Last Jedi. And of course, as everyone knows, they're depicted as being Asian. The actresses themselves are Vietnamese-American in Kelly Marie Tran's case. And again, it was one of those cases where you have a white author writing Asian characters, and there are plenty of voices out there who are Asian who probably could have written those issues, or even writers who are up and coming who haven't been given a shot yet who could have been given a chance to write these issues, and that just, it didn't happen because, privilege and the way that white supremacy is built into systems, including the publishing industry, that's not Delilah's fault, but it's a thing that happened, and her reaction to it, to people criticizing her, kind of was her fault, because she was just like, I'm a mid-list author, like, what am I supposed to do? Like, I take jobs as I receive them. And there are other people who, like, totally agreed with her, like, you know, she needs, I don't know, that, like, she needs to take jobs, like, this is her life and things like that. Like, she's a mid-list author, she's not just gonna turn down jobs. And the thing is, though, that, yeah, but they can. And if you're gonna be an ally, I really think you have a responsibility to do that. A lot of the time, I think what white people don't understand is that when you've been given a larger share of opportunities, and you're saying that you want everyone else to have the same opportunities, you have to give something up. Because through no fault of anybody's, you have a larger share of this industry, and people are going to think of you first because racism is systemic. But for you to not think about what you need to give up and what you actually need to do instead of just say is incredibly problematic. That's called performative allyship. And it's not great. And it's a thing that is inherent in not only just straight out racism, but white feminism. And, you know, you can't, like, there's no such thing as armchair allyship, basically. You can't just sit there and say nice things and tweet hashtag Black Lives Matter and then not actually do anything in your actual life. And so, yeah, it's just, And this is all, and this is not all, all this is not to say that white authors shouldn't write characters of color into their books. Like, white people should not only write about white people the way that, like, I, as an Asian American, shouldn't only write about Asian Americans. Like, we should be writing about all kinds of different people, but you have to understand that what you're doing there. Like, if you are writing, you know, if you're a white author writing an Asian protagonist, you are taking that space away from an Asian writer. Whereas, like, you know, you can populate your world with, like, characters of, like, different ethnicities and whatnot, but, you know, that's, it's different. You're not necessarily channeling their voices so hard. It's just, it just gets, it's all this situation that gets super sticky, and it makes me really squicked out about Delilah. I used to follow her on Twitter myself, and I had to unfollow her because it was traumatizing, honestly. Because it was just gross. So anyway, that's me.
Yeah, and I think just from my own following of Delilah and of this situation as well, I think it's in the actions, but it's also in the reactions. And one thing that to me was very frustrating as well was, I think within a week before this, the Tico Sisters comic issue broke, she had tweeted about how her headcanon is that Poe Dameron is gay, which is, you know, I think a very common and popular headcanon within the Star Wars fandom.
Oh, this is a good one to bring up, actually, Chris. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. And somebody had asked her to, like, somebody had been like, you should write that. Like, you should write a book about how Poe is gay. Or, like, write a book about Poe and include that he is gay. And her response, which I was very, which I thought was a really good response, and I was really, like, pleased to see and proud to see in the fandom, was that, no, it's not her place to write that story. That's a story that someone needs to write, and it shouldn't be her. And she used the hashtag own voices tag, which is a tag that's been used by the literary community to get to this exact point about how there are so few tales of diverse voices or led by diverse voices and diverse protagonists that those tales should be told by authors who are of that, whether it's racial or ethnic group or, oh my God.
Sexual orientation.
Thank you. Minority community. Yes. And then to go from that to just days later.
It wasn't even days later. It was the same day. Somebody called
her
out.
Was it the same day?
Yeah, somebody called her out for, first of all, headcanning Phasma's ace, even though Dawson's not ace herself. And then about, well, you wrote the comic about the Tico sisters. And she kind of just lashed out. The tweets are deleted. I'm not going to, like, be that person who goes and tweets out receipts or anything like that. But I saw it happening, and it's just really squeaky.
Yeah, and it's and like I said, it's the action and it's the reaction. And I think part of being a good ally is to, if you mess up, to acknowledge that and to say, you know what? Yes, I am writing this, or I wrote this. And you know what? Thinking about it, I don't know if I would take this job again. And this has really left me something to think with. Or this is why I did it and blah, blah, blah. But and your concerns are valid. And I hear you. And like just basically showing that you hear voices that are so commonly silenced.
Honestly, I don't.
When you purport to.
Right.
Yes.
Like, honestly, I don't even want an explanation of why she took the job or anything like that. The thing about white people is they don't know how to just say, I'm sorry. This was bad. I am listening to you, and stop right there.
Yep.
Like, white people and men just do not know how to do that. And it's ridiculous. I don't want qualifiers. I don't want excuses. I don't want any of that. And Chris, you brought up the own voices hashtag. One of the most frustrating things about this is that it was one of the things that emerged from the We Need Diverse Books movement, which again is... I think I've talked about it on the pod before, but it's this this movement and now a nonprofit started by Ellen O, who is a YA author, and it really started in the YA community about the fact that, I mean, just what it says, we need diverse books, for fuck's sake. And
just I want to plug Poppy's episode, because we got into why YA authorship and books are kind of the reason things are moving in a direction that is not as bad as it once was.
Yeah.
So if you want to listen to that, we put a bonus ep out with at Poppy Ashright, who is a co-host of the Parabatai pod. But yeah, we get into some of this kind of good conversation about YA being a great place for minority communities to be represented more quickly and I don't want to say better, I don't want to put a qualifier on it, but more frequently and in a more positive and actually representative way than a lot of other, I don't want to call it a genre, and if you listen to it you'll know why I don't want to, but yeah, sorry Kate, I didn't want to cut you off, but I thought that was a good place to plug that.
Yes, that is definitely a good episode to listen to. And I want to point out that YA wasn't always like that, you know. Yeah. And the thing is that it was the authors who decided that things needed to change, and things are changing. I walked into a bookstore a few months ago and was looking at the YA shelf, and it was incredible and inspiring, and I pretty much like almost started crying, because they were just like, I was looking at the names of the authors. And it wasn't just like, you know, John Smith wrote a book about, like, this kid named Derek and, like, how hard life is because he goes to high school and this girl won't fucking go out with him kind of shit. Like, it was, no, like, honestly, though, it's, like, it's amazing. And a lot of the authors that were on that shelf are in, from a certain point of view. And so you should go check mm-hmm. that out. I saw there were many of them in there. But, again, the We Need Diverse Books and the Own Voices hashtag were started by writers of color, again, in the YA community. But it's been co-opted by white folks as a way to wash their hands of this whole thing and say, well, we need Own Voices, so I'm not going to put people of color in my book. No, man, that's not what you do. That is not cool. Which I'm not saying is what Delali's doing. I just want to give context.
Yes, thank you.
Yes. But yeah, it's just... Anyway, as you can see from this conversation, it has a lot of history, it has a lot of context, and all of the feelings and the long history of racism in this country surrounding it, and it just feels like Dawson has not really sat down and thought about that. And when you call yourself an ally and you are, you know, honestly creating these fantastic characters who are people of color, like, you, there you have a responsibility to sit down and think about these things, and she hasn't done it yet, and I have no reason really to believe that she's ever going to do it, and I hate that a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, just to add one thing and kind of bring it back to another, something that we try to do with this podcast is hold creators accountable as well, and that's why we don't read the Marvel comics anymore, because of the fact that their editor-in-chief is now C.B. Cebulski, who pretended to be a Japanese writer to get jobs, essentially, and in doing so, undoubtedly took jobs away from Japanese writers.
And subvert the rules and then be rewarded for it by being the CEO now of fucking Marvel.
Yes, exactly. And...
or editor-in-chief, my bad.
Yes, and it's about the fact that we love Star Wars and we want to see room for everyone in Star Wars. And as part of that goal, we need to acknowledge that we can love something and still hold it accountable.
Absolutely. And, you know, we say these things because we hope that things are going to continue to change for the better. As we've said on previous episodes, we were one of the founders of the Star Wars Representation Matters hashtag, and we joined that right at the beginning. We didn't realize how big it was going to become because, like, we value these things. And, I mean, Lucasfilm says they value these things, but then they go and do things like hire goddamn D.B. Weiss. D.B. What the fuck are their names? Fucking Game of Thrones.
It's David Benioff and D.B. Weiss.
Yeah, okay. Fucking Game of Thrones, guys. You know, and it's just, you know, we're not going to stop talking about this. And, like, we're not going to be assholes when we talk about this, but we're not going to pull punches either, because that's not an effective way to talk about issues that are serious and weighty and deserve to be talked about in, honestly, as public a way as possible. Because it's the things we're talking about, they're ugly. There are festering wounds in this country from assist to slavery and, you know, how, like, hundreds of years of racism. And we're, like, if now is not the time to talk about it, then when are we going to talk about it?
Very well said.
Absolutely. And just a huge shout out to you, Kate, for taking that on and just kind of explaining all of that really, really well. I hope I speak for Chris when we say that that is not your job. But we are very appreciative that you are patient and gracious enough to do that, especially on this podcast, because it is not a thing that I feel like I can do as a white woman, just because I am tired of hearing other white women talk. but thank you. So just thank you from me and Chris for helping us tackle and using, you know, helping us tackle these bigger issues that we strive to tackle and don't want to shy away from, and hopefully using our platform in a helpful way.
Yeah. I think this is the first time I've ever been called patient and gracious in my entire life, but I appreciate that. Thank you. And, like, I don't want to talk and other, you know, disclaimers or whatever. Like, I don't pretend ever to speak for entire communities of color, queer community, like, even, like, the Asian American queer community. Like, these are my personal opinions, but think about these things, guys, like, just for like a minute, like, even just maybe sometimes, that'd be great.
Yeah, totally.
on a lighter note, as we always do, now that we've gotten through all the heavy shit, this time it's not trauma, so stay tuned for more Star Wars trauma talk.
I think
at a later date.
Hey, I think I did trauma talk,
right?
Myself.
Seriously.
You absolutely see, and it just wasn't we didn't just talk about it in the book context this time, so absolutely we did trauma talk.
Yay!
But let's end the episode as we often do these wrap-up episodes with our favorite Easter eggs.
Eggs. Okay, so We're the Star Wars fandom likes talking about basically the Force Awakens sisterhood of the traveling jacket. So I also appreciated that Vi just like grabs a leather jacket from inside of her Starhopper before she gets super captured by the First Order, and she's like, "It's a little soft, like a Kanji Club dude, whatever." And I was just like, "Okay, that's awesome." The second thing is that possibly the best part of this book. Fucking sand, like, literally lifts the I hate sand lines from Attack of the Clones and dumps them in Brendel Hux's mouth, which might be, like, the best thing ever. Like, he must be rolling over in his... He doesn't have a grave, actually. Never mind. He's...
Nope, he's disintegrated.
He's back to tank.
He's got a drain. He's rolling in his drain.
Okay. This got weird.
Oh, God, this is the grossest episode.
Is he Yeezy in that drain? Or?
Yeah.
Stop, Kate. Why did you have to do that?
No, I mean, I feel like the sand one was all of us. Like, it's just that I know that went viral when the book first came out, and I just like wanted to throw things across the room with love because it's just so
she perfect. Literally, yeah, he literally says it's coarse and it's gritty and it gets everywhere. Like, it's just a direct pull.
Yeah. Like, no, that honestly, that was a masterful troll job, and I applaud her for that.
Yep, I loved it. My, aside from sand, because it's just in a class of its own, I really appreciated how, after Vi gets zapped after telling her story about Phasma, so toward the end of the book, she's sitting in the cell and kind of trying to recover herself, and she's thinking about how she's getting too old for this sort of thing, which is, speaking of direct lifts, this is a direct lift from, Obi-Wan Kenobi in A New Hope.
Very funny.
Oh yeah, I love shit like that. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Kiki,
mine was so the ship that ends up being Phasma's armor, and also the ship that they are trying to get to during the entire book, is ye old Palpy's yacht, from from his time on Naboo. So that's really fun and weird and great.
And
I can't believe they did that.
It's great. And just to give a little more Easter eggy context of it, that's actually an Empire's End what reference. Else
I was going to say, Chris probably knows more about this.
It's a what?
It's an Empire's End reference.
Nice.
It is how, without giving away too much, it is the ship that Brendel takes to rendezvous with the rest of the First Order.
Okay, which is also fabulous just because I think, again, things I've mentioned on the pod before, Chuck Wendig, the author of the Aftermath trilogy, and Delilah Dawson, they're like besties, so that's sweet that
yeah.
She honored him that way.
I love it.
It's the, what is it called? The Imperialis? I just did a quick...
Yes, it is.
Random Google. One in a row, Kristen remembered. She didn't. She just did it. I literally wrote "Ye old Hux using poopy ship," so that's where I am.
I mean, is it wrong?
But you guys knew exactly what I was talking about.
Yep. Also, is the Imperialis not the most dickhole name for a ship you ever heard? Because holy, oh my god!
I mean, also, that and the Executor.
Also, it's a yacht. Right?
I know. No, the Executor is cool. The Imperialis.
And the Executor's like in line with other ships.
Right.
That's true.
The Imperialis is just like, you're a dick.
I know. Like, it's like the fucking Aurora Borealis of evil. I don't know. It's like, I hate it.
It's true.
That's what it is. Yep.
Well, leaving it on Aurora Borealis of evil, that takes us to the end of this episode of the Book Wars Pod and to the end of us reading Phasma. So thank you all for joining us. And as we've talked about in the past, our next episode is going to be... our next book is going to be Aftermath by Chuck Wendig, and to start off, we're going to be reading the start of the book through, there's an interlude on a planet called Nalal, which is right after chapter 9. When I was dividing this up, I was like, all right, these are good places to stop, and they're just confusing to say. So it's the interlude after chapter 9 that we're reading through,
through the interlude
on Nalal.
What other book do we, like, read through interludes on?
Ahsoka.
It was Ahsoka.
Ahsoka. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for knowing exactly what I was talking about from that very vague description.
Yep. And so we hope that you'll join us and read Aftermath with us, because we're super excited for it.
Yeah, and just to be clear, it's just the first book of the Aftermath trilogy that we're reading at this time.
Yes.
Actually, I want y'all to just read all three immediately at all the same time.
Yep. That's concurrently. Not even finishing Aftermath already? First.
No. Okay. Chris did.
I've read them, yeah.
Okay.
And in the meantime...
No, I feel like it's going to be really hard. I feel like I can't read all of them because I'm just going to want to talk about them. And we've already been down that horrible road with Phasma where I've read ahead. Never again. I'm so annoying. I'm so sorry, everyone, that you had to sit through that. But I really... But except for, like, it's probably going to happen again because right? I'm... have to be in Denmark for a week and I'm gonna be so jet lagged and it's gonna be 3 a.m and I'm gonna be like, well, I'm also just gonna read a Star Wars.
Kristen, we'll give you other Star Wars to read.
Okay, good idea.
There we go. Anyway, in the meantime, hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram and Tumblr at Book Wars Pod, particularly after this episode. You know, we want to hear your thoughts on the controversy around Delilah, on the controversy around Phasma. You know, we want to, you know, it's an important conversation to have.
Somebody's gonna rip me a new asshole if you invite them to do that.
Well, okay, don't be assholes and don't be mean, but like, we wanna, it's an important conversation to have about the importance of being a good ally and of representation in Star Wars.
Listen, guys, I tried to be polite when I was talking about it. I only said eat my ass one time about trolls, so.
This is correct.
That's right. I know. And don't worry, we get nice and feisty with the block button, so if you want to be an asshole, go ahead.
Right.
We will block the shit out of you from all of our accounts.
But after you get blocked, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast.
1 star! Fucking liberals! Fucking snowflakes! There's no Asian space!
There's no Asian space. Anyway, rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast and to the Tashi Station Radio mega feed. And donate to the Tashi Station Radio Patreon as it helps us cover our hosting and production costs. Thanks to Tashi Station Radio, our parent network. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Design. For Kate and Kristen, I'm Chris. Thank you so much for listening to the Book Wars Pod and reading Phasma with us. And we'll be talking to you about Aftermath next week.
Wah, wah, wah.
Exactly.
He's like beating a droid to death.